Blog Talk Radio.
All right, welcome to the FFToolbox.com podcast. This is your host, Ben Standig. I believe I've got George Bissell on the phone with me. George, are you there?
Hey, how's it going, Ben? I'm here.
Hey, good. Thank you. I apologize to anybody who was waiting for us at 7 o'clock Eastern time. There's some technical problem. I don't know enough about these things to know, but we got it worked out. We should be joined in a few moments by one of our other writers, Brian Murphy. So we'll get into the show. We're going to do a quicker show tonight than in the past. For those of you who are still alive in Week 17 leagues, I'm going to tell you up front, we're probably not going to be going through every game, or I shouldn't say probably, we're not going to, but we'll talk about it briefly. My buddy George here is one of those guys who still is in the league that plays, so we'll get his take since I've mentally, at least for the moment, sort of checked out. I had a league just end last night, and unfortunately Adrian Peterson brought me home a title, so not to talk about my world, but I've sort of checked out here for the moment in terms of what is happening this week. But we'll get to all that in a second. And in addition, we're going to do a quick recap of sort of the year that was, get our initial impressions now that the league is now that the season's basically been put to bed. Also wanted to let everybody know that we will be hanging around here now for a few more weeks and throughout the off season. Next week we're going to get back to a big full lengthy show. We're going to have guests on talking about the NFL playoffs. We'll be talking about fantasy playoff drafts. I know I'm getting excited for my upcoming draft. And we'll also do our superlatives talking about the season it was and our take on the players that made the season what it was. I think it was a pretty good year overall. But let's get right into this week's show. And George, what I first want to talk about is sort of the Indianapolis Colts situation and what they went through last week and how that affected fantasy leagues. Now, I don't want to get into the whole should they have gone try to win and all that. I mean, my personal take is I think every year somebody wins the Super Bowl, but not every year somebody goes undefeated. I would have liked to have seen them have the opportunity to try for that. With that said, I don't blame them for being nervous about players getting hurt and sitting them. And, you know, if that's their call, so be it. I don't have a huge problem with that. But for fantasy leagues, you know, I think my issue with here is, you know, the Colts are still only one team. They were the only team last week that had this dilemma, which is why Week 16 is a good week to end it, because typically you're not going to have any more than that. But Week 17, and I'm, you know, not picking on you because you're one of these leagues, but too many people, it seems, are still doing Week 17, and I guess I'm just not getting why in this, you know, why this happens. First year I ever played fantasy, we did exactly that, but this was 15, 16 years ago. We didn't know any better, and then we all had it bite us at some point, so we switched off that. It just seems to me that I get that everybody tries to milk every last, you know, drip of the NFL season because everybody loves it so, but when you play your whole year with, you know, Peyton Manning and Joseph Addai, I don't want my season decided because I'm now going with Chad Henne and Donald Brown. And I guess I don't get why people are still I guess I don't get why people are still doing that. So this is almost as much I'm imploring those who still do Week 17s to, going forward, you know, look to do something else. I mean, I think I could make an argument that Week 15 should maybe even be the deadline. But all right, whatever. 16 is good enough. So I basically am imploring everybody. But George, since I'm not in one of these leagues and haven't been forever, am I missing something? Is there a reason when other people in your league, they're expressing their, you know, why they like it? Is there something I'm missing, or what's the argument?
Yeah, my buddy who actually he runs the league, and we all are in it together. It's a 10-team league on ESPN, the 4-letter network, and he believes it's more of a purist kind of thing. You know, you go till the end of the season. You know, it's a true test of skill in that final week. And I'm frustrated because he's never made the championship game. I've made it the last 5 years. I've been every week it seems I'm scrambling at the end of the year. Like this year I'm stuck in a situation where I have Dallas Clark. He's probably only going to play a series or two. So I'm stuck at tight end right now where I have to go out and get somebody just to fill in. And I'm relying on Donald Brown at running back because I don't know if some of the other guys are going to play. Joseph Addai, I don't know if he's going to play at all. So rounds to fill in. It's a frustrating situation to be in if you make it. It's a good thing to make it to the championship, but I'd rather be on week 16, not 17.
Right. I mean, like, if you were fortunate to, whatever, either drafted Chris Johnson, picked up, Vince
Probably.
Young, assigned, traded for Randy Moss, whatever it is, whatever moves you made to get you to that point, it almost becomes they become invalidated because half the guys aren't going to be there. Now, just to be clear, at this point on Tuesday, and we'll see how the week progresses, the Colts obviously are going to be in the same position where they are likely to rest players again. Other teams are in the same boat. The Chargers, I still don't know what they're going to do. They have nothing in essence to play for, though I suspect they may do what the Colts did, play their guys a half because they don't want to give them a whole week off, then the bye, then another week. That may be too long. The Cardinals, possibly a similar situation. They may know their fate, I believe, by the time they start to play, and they may not have anything to play for. Same thing with the Bengals. And these are only the teams at the top. We're not even talking about some of the bottom teams who are already making decisions to rest players, put people out for the year on injured reserve, where they may not have done that earlier in the year. So you're really just not getting, in a lot of cases, the max roster. So I'll get off my soapbox on that. But, I mean, at the end of the day, if you're going to play a head-to-head league, then it seems like you should maximize the players that are there. If you're playing baseball and you play a rotisserie style where you play the whole year, then if the Yankees decide to rest A-Rod or CC Sabathia in the last week or so, it doesn't really mean as much because you've had a whole, 5 months cumulatively. But, in week 17, it doesn't help you if Adrian Peterson or, maybe more specifically if Peyton Manning is sitting out. It doesn't matter how many touchdowns he threw over the course of the year. So, this is my just going to all you guys out there who are still playing. Consider other options. All right. With that said, let's talk briefly about Week 17. I promised myself I wouldn't get into this a ton, but since you are in the same boat, let's just talk quickly. I'm not going to go through all the games because, like I said, I mean, really each team, they're so specific as to what they may or may not do. We don't have time for that this week. However, quarterback, I think one guy I kind of like this week, if I had to go down this route, I kind of like Chad Henne. They're playing Pittsburgh. Ricky Williams he's probably – Miami still has something to play for, as does Pittsburgh. Ricky Williams will get his touches, but he's probably not going to have as much room to run. Chad Henne has been lighting it up in terms of yardage the last few weeks, and Pittsburgh's been vulnerable to the pass. So, if you had to go down that route, I'd say take a look at Henne. And running back, George already mentioned it, he's going Donald Brown, and that's definitely a guy I'd look at. They're playing at Buffalo, the last-ranked run D in the league. And Brown's a good player, so, if he can get in there, especially maybe when Peyton Manning is still in the game, if that happens,
They've really been talking about getting him a lot of carries. They want to get him ready for the playoffs. A lot of you guys remember he's been injured with a shoulder. He hasn't played a lot the last couple of weeks. So they really want to establish him, get him ready for that playoff series.
Right, and then the receiver, and this is a guy who really it was quite impressive last night, and I'll throw it out there again. Mm-hmm. Devin, I'm going to butcher this name, Aroma Shadu, on the Bears. Look, I don't trust Jay Cutler as far as I can throw him, even though he had a big game last night. But the Bears are playing the Lions, who've given up the most passing touchdowns in the league. Devin Hester has been, dealing with injuries. Unclear yet if he's going to play this week. And, I can see the Bears deciding to sit him. And Johnny Knox also went out with an injury.
Yes,
so there should be an opportunity there for him this week. And, again, that matchup's pretty good. So, if you're those are three guys I take a look at. If you're really up the creek, but again, you can still check our website on fftoolbox.com. I think the guys have all the rankings up, so we're not leaving you high and dry across the board. But on this podcast, we are just a touch. So hopefully you won't be offended by that. Next year you'll get on board with the whole week 16 aspect. But if you do have any email questions, feel free to email me at ben.standig@fftoolbox.com, and I'm sure George wouldn't mind helping you out since he is still focused trying to win a title this week.
I'm still in title mode, Ben. I'm still there.
I'm glad somebody is. I after last night it was a big sigh of relief. That's all I can say.
Congratulations, though.
Yeah, thank you. All right. So what I wanted to do though is as I said, next week we're going to really do more of our superlatives, of really picking our players, sort of our all-stars, MVPs, jeers and cheers, all that type of stuff. But what I wanted to sort of take a look at this week at some of the key positions to sort of get our, you know, our quick thoughts right now as to what we kind of look back on and saw at the year, what were sort of the key moments and defining moments per position. And let's start at quarterback. And when I look at the stats for the final stats for the year, you know, I think for the most part, all the top quarterbacks delivered. Other than Jay Cutler, I don't think there's anybody really who was consistently picked in the top 10 or 12 who faded dramatically to the point where where they were outside that group. For the most part, all the guys. I mean, the plan at the beginning of the year was there were three guys at the top with Aaron Rodgers right behind, then another group of say four, and then a third group just on the heels of those guys. So about 12 overall. In some way, you could pick numbers 5 to 12 in different orders, all depending. And it ultimately really worked out exactly like that. Aaron Rodgers, even though he was the fourth guy, he ended up being number one, but right behind him, Breeze, Manning, and Brady, all three guys, you know, predicted to be in the top four. Out of the next, say, 6 to 8, Brett Favre is the only one who really was somewhat of a surprise to be there. And in fairness to any of us who have to make these predictions, you know, the Favre signing came on so late in the year. Plus, it was, you know, whether he was injured, how was he going to fit in, all that, you know, all the other drama. You know, I think that's a fair one to have, you know, sort of missed on, if that's the right word. And like I said, Cutler and maybe you could argue Matt Hasselbeck are probably the two biggest misses of the year. But really, I mean, quarterbacks this year, if you didn't have a quarterback, something was wrong with you because all the guys pretty much delivered. And another key thing I think that happened with quarterbacks in particular, but also just fantasy in the first half of the year, most of my leagues really were very tight all throughout the year. And I think it was largely because the injury factor really didn't jump up until the last few weeks. And especially a quarterback, other than, you know, Donovan McNabb missed a game or two early on and Matt Ryan missed some games later on. But for the most part, all the quarterbacks stayed healthy. And I think that really affected how some people, weren't getting, and because so many quarterbacks were doing well, people weren't getting a huge edge at that position. Yeah, you would have Drew Brees or Rodgers do really well in a given week, but over the course of the year, you know, a lot of players you weren't losing at the quarterback spot for the most part if you had Roethlisberger, Warner, McNabb, whoever. Anyway, so that's my take on the quarterback, George. What are your thoughts on what all that kind of I just laid out there, and what was your take on the quarterback position this year?
You laid out a lot for me there. I got a lot to choose from.
Absolutely.
The guy I'm going to have to go with has not the biggest surprise of the year, but he really established himself as an elite quarterback, not only this year, but going forward for the next couple of years, is Aaron Rodgers. Greg Jennings had been an emerging fantasy star, but you really saw kind of the renaissance of Donald Driver, a guy who kind of been the forgotten man, an older a veteran receiver in that offense for Green Bay. You're seeing guys like JerMichael Finley, James Jones, even guys like Spencer Havener were having fantasy value at some point this season. So Aaron Rodgers was really impressive to me this year, and he stands out the most of any of the quarterbacks this season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Rodgers really, I mean, I was a huge fan of his before the season started. He definitely delivered. And you really look what happened with that team. He was sacked, I think it was 41 times the first half of the year. They cut that down to about, I think, less than 10 going into this past week, so they really improved their line. But for him to have gotten as battered as he did early on and yet still deliver is really impressive. And to me, we're going to do some meaningless predictions for next year, but right now, if I had to predict, I'd say Rodgers is the number one quarterback next year. Now, will he get picked number one? Probably not, because Breeze and Manning or whatever, but you look at what Rodgers did. Not only did he have the receivers you just talked about, you know, James Jones, like you said, up and coming. They have got Jordy Nelson, another up and coming guy.
Yeah, Finley really like Jordy.
Right. Finley only played really, you know, the last, you know, handful of games over the year where he was really effective. And you got to figure they're going to improve that offensive line. I would assume that's going to be a big priority for them in the offseason. So I think there's a lot to like with Green Bay going into next year. Would you say Rodgers is your number one guy next year, or you got somebody else in mind?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's rare when you have a guy like Aaron Rodgers, a talent like that, and there's still upside that they really can build around him. You talked about the offensive line. There are some issues there, but they can definitely improve that through the draft and free agencies. They had a lot of injuries on that line. That was a big reason for the sacks around the year. I agree. Aaron Rodgers is probably the number one guy next year. You can make an argument for, you know, the Breeze, Manning, and Brady's of the world, but I think Aaron Rodgers will end up being the number one again.
Yeah. Now, of those sort of the guys that finished, you know, somewhere in the top 10 or 12 or so, any of them that you're, I mean, again, versus, as we call them, meaningless predictions, but any of them that you're right now going, you know, at this moment in time, I'm thinking I'd be steering clear of that player for whatever the reason.
Yeah, a guy I wouldn't totally commit to at any point is Matt Schaub. Well, first off, you have injury concerns with Schaub. He's never been able to stay 100% healthy at any point until this year. And also, there might be a coaching change if we see Gary Kubiak get fired. New system. I know they still have a ton of weapons in that offense, but you got to wonder how a new system affects him. I'd be a little nervous committing to him as a top 10 guy next year.
Yeah, no, that's good. And yeah, I mean, we got to see Houston. You know, it was impressive what Schaub was able to do, but they have some limitations on that offense. We got to see if Steve Slayton is a real number one back. I don't think he is, but and they also could use another receiver, so we'll see.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, Schaub showed if he can stay healthy, he's pretty good. I mean, I guess the guy I'll just point to fairly obvious reasons, and that's Favre, simply because one, who the heck, who even knows if he's going to play next year, and two, you know, at his age, you know. As much as I want to bash the guy, it's incredible what he did this year. But you know, at some point, you know, I wouldn't. There's other guys I'd rather go towards than him at the level that he's likely going to get picked at least. So I'll sort of just leave it at that. And then as far as quarterbacks who were not, you know, probably, you know, fantasy starters most of the year or at all point of the year, is there anybody who's, you know, down the line right now that you're looking at next year and thinking, you know, this guy could very well be a legit QB1 at some point next year?
Yeah, I think I'm going to highlight two guys, and one guy we talked about earlier was Chad Henne. He's thrown for over 300 yards three of the last four games. And he's done that with literally no talent around him. Devon Bess is the number one receiver in that offense. Greg Camarillo, Brian Hartline. If he gets some legitimate receivers, I think he's a threat to, you know, ascend in the top 10, the upper tier. Another guy is Vince Young, and that's based purely on his running ability. If he runs for 40 yards and a touchdown, that's 10 points. So if he gets you 40 yards rushing, that's as good as 100 yards passing. So I think his running ability combined with his ability as a passer makes him kind of a unique guy, almost like Michael Vick early in his career, where he's a double threat and that you can really maximize points with a guy like Vince Young.
Yeah, no, I agree with both of those. I mean, and the other thing with Vince Young, he's got the Titans have upgraded their receiving core. They've got three legitimate receivers. And I think we'll get into this guy next year, but Jared Cook is a guy who's probably going to take over a tight end for them, and he may do for the Titans offense what Finley did for the Packers. So, and then, of course, he got, you know, all he has to do is dump the ball off to Chris Johnson, and he'll take it 60 yards for a touchdown. So I agree. I was going to point Henne as to my guy. Another guy I'll just throw out there, I think Joe Flacco, this could be the year. If the Ravens can add a receiver or two, which I think they will try to do, be it Anquan Boldin or somebody in the draft, I think Flacco could take that leap up to that you know, top 12 level. All right, let's go over to running backs now. Sort of a mixed bag of a year at running backs. I mean, some of the guys at the top delivered, of course, Peterson and Chris Johnson and Maurice Jones-Drew, but you also had a few guys who slacked off. But really, ultimately, I mean, the split backfield in some respect was, you know, the story of the year because you just had so many situations where week to week you just never knew who was truly going to be the guy for a given team. Now, the positive of that is that it always seemed like no matter what was happening in any given week, there was always some free agent running back to get if you needed it. Not necessarily somebody that spectacular, but, you know, I mean, look what we just had happen down here at the end of the year with Jerome Harrison, you know, comes out of nowhere.
Don't remind me. Don't remind me.
Yeah, I hear you. But, you know, I think this was so many split backfields. I mean, you had Seattle even down the stretch, you know, going series to series with Julius Jones and Justin Forsett. So I think all we saw with running back this year is the split backfield. I mean, continues to do a number on teams, but if you were able to find the guys who basically had the backfield to themselves for the most part, you know, you were most likely, I'm going to guess, you most likely were in the mix more than the other guys.
No, I agree 100%. Guys talk about the bell cow back, the guy who's going to carry the load, the guy who's going to get 20-plus carries, the guy who's getting goal line carries. Those are the guys with value. And those were the players you saw emerge off the free agency wire, guys who were getting a lot of work, guys like Jerome Harrison. He had 30 carries last game. Jamal Charles getting a ton of work after they released Larry Johnson. Pierre Thomas, when he was given 20-plus carries, was an extremely productive guy. Same thing with Fred Jackson, Justin Forsett. Ray Rice having an increased role, he was really a big factor for fantasy owners this year. And also you saw some veterans, guys like Thomas Jones and Cedric Benson. They were the only guy in their backfield, and when they got 20-plus carries, they were running for 100 yards consistently. There wasn't an elite class, I would say, but there were a lot of guys in that mid-tier who were productive at certain points during the year.
All right. And I think also one of the other negatives of the whole split backfield is you never quite knew when to use a guy, or if you did use a player, you know, you would feel like, oh, great. And, of course, you know, invariably the other guy would score. I mean, I had that with Fred Jackson, Marshawn Lynch. You know,
same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. But, like, especially, like, you know, in Buffalo, Jackson was doing great in the beginning of the year, so you sort of kept wanting to use him the first couple weeks even when Lynch got back. Then he became a total non-factor. And then when he woke up at the end of the year, he probably missed out on him for a couple weeks because you're thinking, well, Lynch is there. What's, you know. So it really was a tough thing. Also, I mean, at this point, we'll see how the backfield shake out next year. You know, hopefully more teams will have a dominant player. But, you know, really it's just going to come down to you know, doing the best you can to find those guys who appear to have the whole backfield to themselves, or at least, you know, we're talking most carries and the goal line touches. Obviously, there's always going to be a third down type back on almost every team. So, I don't know, interesting year. It's gonna be, I mean, there's a lot of teams who need to shake out their backfield going into next year, so it'll be interesting to see what happens in the offseason there.
Yeah,
all right, here's
our Gary Kubiak.
Yeah,
more Gary
exactly.
Kubiak situations.
Oh, God. Exactly. All right, so here's the one running back question heading in the next year. Right now, if you've got the number one pick in the fantasy draft, who are you picking, Chris Johnson or Adrian Peterson?
I think I'm going with Chris Johnson. I'd actually put Maurice Jones-Drew ahead of Adrian Peterson, especially if you're in a PPR league. I like Maurice Jones-Drew personally better than Peterson. But if I have the number one pick, I'm taking Chris Johnson. You got to think he's going to get to 2,000 yards, and he's just been a playmaker. We already talked about Vince Young and the other weapons in that offense. He really has a chance to become a dynamic player and go on a stretch like we saw LT go on early in his career. I think he's one of those special guys, and if you have the number one pick, you want to invest in him.
Yeah, I mean, the greatest thing about Chris Johnson this year, even on some level beyond his long touchdown runs, which happened so, you know, frequently, but really was the fact that it was the disappearance of Lendale White. I mean, except for a couple times here and there, Chris Johnson was the guy getting the goal line carries. Now, if Vince Young is around, there's always that fear that Vince Young might, you know, roll out and steal some of those. But, you know, if Chris Johnson showed how tough he was, and if he can do that, I mean, his fantasy value is going to go off the charts again, considering, you know, he can break those long ones as well. So, yeah, I agree. Chris Johnson. And MJD, I wouldn't have a problem. I think the Peterson thing is really going to come down to what the Vikings do with Favre, if Favre comes back or not, and how that shakes out. But, you know, obviously Peterson still rocks. But, yeah, I may not have a problem with MJD, especially, like you said, in PPR leagues. All right, let's go over to receiver now. To me, you know, I don't know, Andre Johnson, Larry Fitzgerald, Reggie Wayne, you know, example, those guys, they did fine. If you drafted those guys high, they didn't disappoint you. They had a few weeks here and there where they were like, kind of, eh. But I don't know, receiver this year, I didn't feel that anybody was incredibly, you know, above and beyond the crowd. I mean, definitely guys at the top did well, but, you know, but what I think I sort of took away two things at receiver more this year than anything. First off, you had the guys who you know, went MIA on us, and that was largely due to, you know, poor quarterback play, which was a, you know, big problem for a lot of teams in the league. And those guys included Steve Smith with the Panthers, who was, you know, basically a total non-factor until Jake Delhomme went down, and then he came on the last few weeks of the year. T.O. and Lee Evans up in Buffalo, you know, T.O. got a little more love with Ryan Fitzpatrick in there, but, you know, that is just not saying much. And they were really – basically those guys became fantasy bench warmers. It was pretty hard to trust using them for most of the year. Another guy, even Braylon Edwards, you know, from going to Cleveland, you think his situation can't get much worse. Then he goes, gets traded to the Jets, and Mark Sanchez, you know, his performance, you know, went down as the year went on. So those guys didn't really kill fantasy owners. But on the flip side, this to me was the year of the fantasy free agent at receiver. Some of these guys may have been picked in theory in the late rounds of your draft, but most of these guys were available in leagues, and we're looking at Mike Sims-Walker, Sidney Rice, and then definitely Miles Austin. I think those three guys in particular, they went from being who's that to, you know, almost within overnight being totally viable starters, and really, especially in the case of Rice and Austin, but Sims-Walker there for several weeks as well, I mean, they were really carrying teams. I was fortunate to have a couple of those guys. And, you know, I mean, Sims Walker was a beast there for a while. And then Miles Austin, even at, you know, even you think he's going to have that one big week, you know, he's never going to get back to that level. Well, he didn't, but he was way consistent throughout the whole year and really looked the part of a number one receiver. So to me, the takeaway this year was it was for me the year of the free agent receiver and how because there were so few injuries at the other spots, this was like one place where you could make a difference. You could get a bump up, an unexpected bump, without having to make a trade that was not, you know, as forthcoming from the other two positions, you know, especially the first, say, 10 weeks of the year.
Yeah, we could have all seen this coming because all three of those guys, Austin, Sims, Walker, and Rice, they all emerged from a clouded situation where you didn't know who the number one guy was. And they came in, they made some big plays, they established some consistency, and they became the number one wide receiver in that offense. So all three guys, yeah, you're right, it was the year of the free agent wide receiver. All three guys were really major factors down the stretch, especially Miles Austin.
Looking ahead to the next year, just picking out those three guys that we just talked about, Austin, Rice, and Sims Walker, do you see any of them? Do you see any of them sliding back, or do you see them all? You know, do you see any of them sliding back? Do you see any of them stepping up even more, or somewhere in between?
I think you see Sidney Rice sliding back a bit, depending on the Brett Favre situation. Does Favre come back or not? So I think we're a little unsure about Sidney Rice right now. But Miles Austin is definitely a guy who I think his fantasy value is going to remain high. Tony Romo is still the quarterback. It's becoming a real pass-first offense in Dallas, and he's one of the biggest playmakers on that team. So I think he's still a top-10 guy. Mike Sims-Walker, he's too inconsistent to trust as a number one, but he's an excellent number two, number three guy at this point heading into next season.
Yeah, and I think in his case, I think Jacksonville, this may be the year Jacksonville finally moves off of Garrard. I mean, we'll see what they do with their coaching staff in general. But, you know, there's all that Tim Tebow talk, and we'll see if that works out. But I think either way, they may be they may very well be the team to if they get a new quarterback, then that could, you know, change Sims Walker's value. If they get a rookie, he's probably not going to be as interesting. But if they get a veteran or somebody who's ready to go, then I think he could be pretty good. But, yeah, I agree. Austin of those guys is the best. Absolutely. All right, let's take a look at the rookie class this year. The previous year, in 2008, yeah, rookies were a huge deal. I'm probably going to forget some names here, but you had Chris Johnson. You had some of the rookie. You had some of the quarterbacks. There were a lot of players that year who stepped up. This year, you know, I mean, there were a few guys that delivered. I mean, Percy Harvin, up until the migraine, sort of got the best of him, really had a strong year. You know, Hakeem Nicks had his moments and a couple other guys here and there. But, you know, the quarterbacks were totally non-factors for fantasy except for using defenses against them. The running backs, you know, no Sean Marino, he had a couple games here and there. But, you know, I won't say it was a disappointing year for him, but he certainly didn't live up to the – other rookie running backs who kind of exploded onto the scene. And the thing is, he was probably the best of those, you know, top rookies. I mean, Donald Brown, basically, from a fantasy perspective, a bust of a year. Beanie Wells really was a non-factor until the last few weeks of the season. So not a ton of rookies this year, which is always a little surprising, but, you know, it happens. Any rookie this year that sort of caught your eye, good, bad, or indifferent?
I feel like this class in general, there were a lot of great role players in this draft. Not guys who are going to be stars or studs at their position, but they're guys who are going to be, you know, inheriting the Kevin Falk roles of offenses. Slot receivers, I think Percy Harvin's a great slot receiver. LeSean McCoy, Donald Brown, great number two running backs kind of filling a certain role. Austin Colley, Mike Wallace, you know, Johnny Knox, Julian Edelman, those are all slot receivers. I think we saw a lot of them, and the guy I feel really has potential to next season be a number one receiver is Hakeem Nicks, and it's just because of that big playability, and I don't feel like Mario Manningham's a better route runner, a better receiver than Hakeem Nicks, and we've already seen him take over the starting role. So I think next year is a bona fide number one with Steve Smith kind of complimenting him over the middle of the field, and he's a guy I really like. He has a bright future ahead of him in New York.
Yeah, we're definitely on the same wavelength with that. I mean, Nicks is a guy that I have as a keeper in one league, and I did it solely because, I mean, his skill level is off the charts. I loved him coming out of college, and you're right. I mean, he's, you know, everybody talked about, oh, how are the Giants going to offset, you know, the loss of Plaxico Burress, and, you know, they had some moments here and there, but, you know, they had enough playmakers, and Nicks I think it showed that he can be the guy who could be the big one for them. I like Jeremy Maclin with the Eagles as well, but I think only problem I have with him is with him and DeSean Jackson, two similar type players, I think he's going to be a little too streaky to be counted on for, you know, fantasy starting, to be a fantasy starter most of the time. But we'll see. But there's some upside there as well. Let's look at some of these other players. The quarterbacks, I mean, the two big names, obviously Matthew Stafford, Mark Sanchez. You know, neither one of them was a fantasy star by any stretch. The highlight probably for either of them this year was that game where Stafford stayed in with the with an obvious injury and gutted out a win for the Lions. But do you see either of those guys next year being somebody that fantasy owners will even want to contemplate as a, say, rotational starting quarterback?
It's not a guy I'm going to target in the draft at any point. I think Matt Stafford and Mark Sanchez definitely have potential to be quality NFL quarterbacks and fantasy-relevant quarterbacks in the future. It's just they don't really – they're not at that point yet where fantasy owners need to worry about them. I think they take a step forward, and they're worth like a flyer pick in the last round. You know, oh, I'll take a chance on Matt Stafford as a number three or four quarterback, but they're not anything more than that.
Right, yeah, I mean, and the thing is, you know, Sanchez in particular, he's in such a great scenario. The Jets have a great offensive line. He's got a stud back in Thomas Jones. He's got, you know, I'm not the biggest Braylon Edwards fan, but Braylon Edwards, you know, is a big receiver. Jericho Cotchery, Dustin Keller is a really skilled tight end, so he has the weapons, but I was not impressed with him this year, so we'll really see what the Jets can do with him in the offseason. And for Stafford, the thing I liked about him at least was he was very aggressive. Now, that came in and kind of bit him a few times, but that'll happen with rookie quarterbacks. But with Calvin Johnson out there, the Lions still need to get some more weapons. But I like the fact that he was aggressive with the ball, and that is a huge key, not just for fantasy, of course, but for real NFL as well. So I would agree. I don't think either of them are more than a backup at this point, but if I had to pick one, I'd probably take Stafford just because. All right, so we're going into, like I said, we're going into the Week 17 here. Since we talked briefly about the waiver wire guys, and, you know, I made my spiel about why people shouldn't be playing in these weeks. Is there anything else from your perspective that people should be looking at for this week? Any one or two guys that, you know, be it should be considered sitting, or anybody in particular good matchup that people should be looking at?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of garbage time at this time of year. That's one thing, Week 17. There's a lot of games where you go, oh, how did that guy get 150 yards? And two guys, I think, who could do that this weekend are San Diego's, their third-string back, Mike Tolbert. He had 60 yards on only 10 carries in the pass game. You got to figure he's going to get a lot of run in the second half. And in a similar note, Lex Hilliard of the Dolphins was really productive this past weekend. If Ricky Williams doesn't play, I like him as well. But we already talked about the two biggest guys, you know, Don Brown and the wide receiver for the Bears, Aroma Shadu. Those are the two big free agent guys that I think you need to look at if you're still playing out there like I am.
And you know, another a game I think that could be interesting, that two teams, I think the New England-Houston game, that could be a high-scoring game if the Patriots decide they want to play to try to get that third seed and lock that down. Both of those teams have the weapons to score. The Houston is still, you know, at this point still alive for the playoffs, so both teams are going to go at it, but neither defense has shown really the ability to stop anyone. So from a game, that could be a big fantasy game right there, and I wouldn't, you know, pay attention to what New England, you know, what we hear out of New England, but I wouldn't be, you know, I'd start guys in that game. For sure. All right, George. So, like I said, next week we're gonna break down the NFL playoffs. I'm Andy Benoit from the New York Times and the website NFLTouchdown.com will join me. We'll also break down the fantasy playoff draft. I'm really can't wait to figure out who's gonna get in. I'm kind of hoping the Jets don't get into the playoffs simply because I don't want to have to draft any of their players for fantasy. That offense is just so eh. Right now, we already got the Bengals in there with their sort of offense, so I'm rooting for some sort of Houston Pittsburgh wild card scenario. Get a little juice in there for the fantasy playoffs. And then, like I said, we'll also do a we'll also go over some superlatives. George, let me ask you this: since I'm not sure, I can't recall. Are you on with me next week?
Am I on next week with you? I'm not sure.
we don't really have
a schedule out there, but...
All right, I'll check the schedule.
I wouldn't mind jumping in if you need me, yeah. I'd love to
do it. I'll check the schedule. But right now, just looking at the NFL playoffs, I think the NFC in particular is totally wide open right now with kind of what's going on with New Orleans and Minnesota. Starting in the NFC, who right now is the team you're picking to go to the Super Bowl right now?
I think I'm going to go with Philadelphia just because they're the hottest on offense right now. They're really starting to hurt teams on defense as well. They generate a ton of turnovers, and that's the thing that can really benefit you in the playoffs when you have guys like Asante Samuel. They can take the ball away from the other team, and they can really set your offense up to score. So I think they're the hottest team. They're my pick as of right now.
Yeah, that's my pick as well. But I think it's one of those things where it's like everybody's sort of getting on that bandwagon. I was actually a little disappointed that Minnesota lost yesterday because I wanted them to stay the 2 seed, making Philly a little more under the radar, having to go on the road in round 2. But yeah, right now I do like Philly. If I had to just pick somebody else, I think I would look at Green Bay. I mean, they are playing extremely well right now, and I think the key, if they can get past, likely they're going to play Arizona in the first round, I guess. If they get past that game, which is a tough game, Arizona's very good. If they get past that game, then they go to the Saints. We've seen the Saints are definitely falling apart, and Green Bay's offense can certainly match whatever Drew Brees can do. And then if they can get through that, we may be looking at a situation where the Green Bay has to go to Minnesota to play the Vikings. I think that would be an unbelievable scenario. And if that happens, the Packers are going to the Super Bowl. They're not losing to Brett Favre 3 times.
Yeah, I agree. I think the defenses of both the Saints and the Vikings, they're just too beat up, and you're seeing teams exploit those holes. Like you talked about Green Bay and Philadelphia, those are teams that can really exploit weaker defenses on offense. So that's why, they've kind of fallen off as favorites right now.
Right. Now, in the AFC, I think it's fair to say everybody has the Colts and the Chargers somewhere at the 1-2, and the Chargers are getting more love. But looking at the other teams that might be getting in, is there any team in there that you think can challenge one of those top 2 teams and get to the Super Bowl?
I definitely think it's the Patriots, and I'd be a little worried if the Steelers got in because that's a team I think can make some noise if they do get in. But I'm a big Patriots, as a fan of the Patriots, I may sound kind of slanted, but they did have control of the game against the Colts. They were in a position to beat them late. If it wasn't for a poor coaching decision, they probably would have. So I think they can play with the 2 teams. I think San Diego, there are a lot of holes on defense. They lost Jamal Williams early at nose tackle. They're really poor in the secondary. I think there's a lot of holes. They haven't had matchups where someone's exploiting those. And that's why they're on such a tear right now. So I think a team like New England can really go in there and challenge those defenses on offense. And I think they have a chance.
Yeah, I mean, New England, after all the 4th-and-2 talk and they lose to the Saints and all that stuff, they've quietly racked up some wins. And the bottom line is anytime you have anytime you have Tom Brady and Randy Moss, there's no reason to think that team can't compete. They obviously have some questions on defense, but, the thing about the playoffs that people always forget is, it's one thing to get there. It's another thing to know what to do when you get there. And the Patriots won't have that problem with Belichick and Brady. That will be a big thing. If they have to go up against the Colts, we'll see. But if they get anybody else, I like their chances for sure. So I'm with you there. And Pittsburgh would be the other one. I just can't see Cincinnati doing enough. I think the Ravens, their defense is just not what it was. I don't think they're going to be able to carry them enough, and the other wild card teams are going to have just simply too many holes, even if they get in there, be it Denver, Houston, or whoever. Mm-hmm. All right, George, I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you hopping back on here with me, and thank you to anybody who is still here listening. And just as a reminder, we will be on again next week, the week after that, and then we'll take a little bit of break, but we'll get back into the off season. We'll have shows around the time of the NFL free agency period, the NFL Combine, and, of course, review and preview shows for the NFL Draft, which I know George is going to help me on as well. So until next week, this is Ben Standig saying peace. Later, guys.